So, the last couple of weeks, we've been hearing a lot about names and naming. Always reminds me of a confirmation class many years ago. We were talking about Jesus' name and what that means and how each of our names have meaning, whether we know it or not. I shared with them Gregory from the Greek, to be observant or a watchman. Other folks, we were going around the circle, and people were, if they knew it, they were giving their names. And we got to a young man named Lance. And without missing a beat, Lance says, "Big pointy stick, Lance." How much do we put into names? Think of the wonderful lines from Romeo and Juliet. "Oh, be some other name. What's in a name? That which we call a rose, by any other name would smell as sweet." Think of where she's going with that, of course, that names need not define us, but so often they do. Your names can define who you are. Names have power to inform who we are, sometimes to ourselves, and many times to others. How many of us have a telling nickname that has been bestowed on us? Perhaps we cannot shake. I'm also thinking of that wonderful line from a Seinfeld episode. It's one of his stand-up things. He says, when you name your baby Jeeves, you've pretty much mapped out his future. He's going to be a butler, right? Think about where we've been so far in the story with names. We began with Adam, which is a pun on earth, the dirt. He's given the job of naming the animals. No small thing. Of course, there were many of them, but also there's a sense that dominion of human beings began with the naming. Eve is created. Her name means life giver, the one who bears children, gives life. Abram, we met last week, becomes Abraham. He goes from exalted father to father of many. Right after God promises him that they will have offspring as numerous as the stars. Sarai becomes Sarah, princess to mother of nations. Again, a name befitting the one from whom this blessing would flow. And this morning we meet Jacob, right? Abraham and Sarai's grandson. His name means heel. He is a twin, the second born after Esau, and the story goes that as they came from mom's womb, Jacob is holding on to Esau's heel, a heel grabber. It might be a twist of fate in language, but heel comes to describe Jacob pretty much for who he is as he grows. Perhaps you remember the story of Jacob and Esau. Esau is out in the fields, and Rebecca, their mother, encourages Jacob to go into Isaac's room. He's blind at that point. Not to retell the entire story, but through a great charade, Jacob steals Esau's blessing and his birthright. This will be a pattern that Jacob has throughout his life. He's a heel. He doesn't do the right thing, at least. He's tricky and scheming. Where we meet him in the story today, after Esau had learned that Jacob has stolen his father's blessing from him, Esau flies into a murderous rage, and Jacob skips town. And he's gone for many years. He goes to stay with his uncle, but at one point decides that the time is right to return home. And so he's going to confront Esau. He does some things to try and soften
the path before him to maybe soften Esau's heart. And what we have in today's text is this saying that Jacob's kind of talking with God, saying, look, you promised my grandfather and my father that they would have offspring as numerous as the stars. In fact, you've promised me that I would have offspring as numerous as the sand of the sea. Yet, that hasn't happened yet, and I can't do that if Esau still has murder in his heart. So, help me out, God. Soften Esau's heart. Well, the story is a bit of an odd one, I think. You got that verse, I can't remember exactly what verse, it's the one at the top of the page. All of a sudden, this guy appears. No build-up, no description of that, just he shows up and they start wrestling. This is the second week in a row we've had these odd creatures that we're not exactly sure what or who they are, and the text doesn't do us any favors. We kind of let the text evolve, the story evolve, and we come to find that it's a man. No, perhaps it's an angel, perhaps it is God, God's self, in physical, incarnate form. So they wrestle, and his day is coming. The divine figure says, you got to let me go. I got to skip town now. The light's coming. You're going to see my face. Now, what's with that? Well, throughout the Old Testament, we hear that if you are to look upon the very face of God, you shall cease to exist. Matter of fact, the you shall die has an emphasis. You shall really die. You're going to die a big death should you look upon the face of God. So there we begin to get a hint. Maybe this is God, God's self. But Jacob is tenacious. He has God in a hold despite God having struck his hip. I kind of see the angel slipping along to Jacob, you know, dragging on behind him. It's back and forth. What is your name? He says, it's Jacob. He says, wrong. It's now Israel. Jacob tries to get one back. Well, who are you? What's your name? And notice God doesn't give God's name at that point. Answers a question with a question to kind of leave it open-ended. We'll hear maybe how that story ends next week with God's name. But Jacob is blessed. Again, blessed. He's given the name Israel. The one who strives with God. So Jacob goes from being known as the heel to the God wrestler. Now the story goes, Jacob of course does return before Esau. And God must have been at work on Esau's heart. Because there is a grace that Jacob did not expect. The tears flow and the brothers are reunited. What are we to do with this story? Well, one big thing I want to point out is that if we consider the lineage of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, what's wrong with that? This cycle of stories of Esau and Jacob give us a hint. Who was the firstborn? Esau. One could argue that the God of Israel should be known as the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Esau. But Jacob, of course, steals that firstborn status. And notice, God doesn't correct him. God goes along with that. So the first thing I take from the story of Jacob is this: God is not afraid to step over boundaries and practices and understanding the way us humans have, God will act as God acts. God will not be bound by our expectations.
We argued folks would expect that God would continue the promise to Abraham and Isaac through Esau, the firstborn, even if it was a matter of a couple of seconds. But God has in his heart to work through Jacob. And so God does. This is an odd story. What are we to make of it? Well, here's what I take from it. And I'll offer it to you. Years ago, I was talking with at a friend's wedding celebration. His priest, he was Russian Orthodox, and I was talking with the priest, and somehow it got into the Psalms and the language of the Psalms, and he shared with me something that, stuck with me. He said, God would rather be yelled at than ignored. God would rather have us express our emotions of anger, maybe disappointment, disillusionment, than to ignore God. Our God is a God of relationship. And to me, what this story says of Jacob wrestling this angelic divine being who turns out maybe to be God, is God invites our interaction. God invites our conversation. God invites our prayer. God invites us to wrestle in faith with God. Something doesn't feel right, we express it. We think we're headed down the wrong path, we ask God to change direction. We're struggling with something deep and dark and heavy. We don't hide that. We offer that to God. Trust me. God wants to be in relationship, and God will wrestle with us. Maybe not a physical entanglement as Jacob had on the shores of the Jabbok, but a wrestling nonetheless. And it is important, that fact that God appears to Jacob as a physical form. A very real, a tangible form. Remember, God had already appeared to Jacob in the famous story about his dream, right? Jacob's ladder. But that's not what this story, this is no dream. This is not a dark night of the soul like Jesus has later, some hundreds of years in the future, in the Garden of Gethsemane. This is a physical altercation. I think that stresses for us, our God is a God who is involved in our lives. This is not a God who set the world in motion and then receded to some palatial throne to watch things play out. God is involved. And remember, that's where we started when we talked about the second creation narrative. This is a God who gets God's hands dirty. There's soil under God's fingernails from creation. God's very breath is in our lungs. And so we are invited to struggle, to wrestle with God. There's a quote, again, has meant a lot to me. It comes from a book of coaching I shared with you guys months ago. I haven't known you that long. Feels like it, though. Earlier in the year that, I was felt called to coaching at one point, and this is how coaching might help with discipleship. And the very beginning and the introduction, they say, life is a story of improvement. The Holy Christian writings attest that a central theme of existence is the movement towards better. Right? Genesis starts with God's initial improvement project,
of order over chaos, with each day unfolding a new and better aspect of God's creation. Now, Revelation and other texts refer to an end that is really a new and better beginning. Between Genesis and this ultimate renewal, each Christ follower is striving to live a story of improvement, always moving towards fuller connection with God, better community with others, clearer expression of vocation, healthier habits of the heart. Thus it is the story of improvement. Now, there are a couple of things I'm wary about with that text, if we take it out of the context of the story of coaching. First off, it's not all up to us, right? We know that, especially as Lutheran Christians, the act of salvation is God's act that bestows upon us. We can't improve beyond our mortal means. Nor is the story of life's improvement this linear trajectory. I think it can be cyclical. There are seasons in our life where we feel like we're connecting, we're firing on all cylinders, our relationship with God and with others is strong, we're moving forward. But of course, then there are seasons where we feel like we're taking two steps back, that life isn't getting any better. But we keep on. And I like how they explain, or they define better, not by the world's terms, but by terms of those who are called to follow Jesus. Fuller connection with God. Better community with others. Clearer expression of vocation, healthier habits of the heart. I think in his wrestling, Jacob got those things. Definitely a fuller connection with God, a reiteration of the promise that had been made to Abraham and then Isaac and now Jacob. Better community with others. He was reunited with Esau after this event of this wrestling match. Clear expression of vocation. He was reminded he was going to be the father of many nations. Healthier habits of the heart. He backslides. He still behaves like a heel. There are times we scratch our head and wonder exactly what God is thinking. But God worked through Jacob. God works through us. God works through us to establish those things. Fuller connection, better community, clearer vocation, healthier habits of the heart. And it's not always easy wrestling with God. Sometimes we will walk away with a bit of a limp. The struggle will show on our faces, perhaps our demeanor. But we know that this is a God that comes to us. A God that bridges the gap between creator and creature and lovingly embraces us. Even if sometimes it's in a bit of a full Nelson.